everybody. Welcome to episode 390 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
This is a new Comics Wednesday episode for comics coming out July 4th, 2018, so Independence Day. A lot of good books coming out this week. Obviously, Batman 50 is the big one, and Catwoman 1, and we'll talk a little bit about Batman 50 and some of the controversy, but I know that there are still people out there who may not have been spoiled about what's happening in Batman 50, despite the fact there was a New York Times ad and there was all kind of controversy because it was, or not, I say ad, New York Times article is what I should say. And it was right there in the title of the article, kind of spoiled what happens in a way. And the article went very deep into spoiler territory. So, it's still a big issue. I know there's still some of you out there who maybe don't know what happens and you don't have a chance to read the issue before you listen to our episode. So even though normally we don't get into spoilers on the new Comics Wednesday episodes, just because it's such a monumental issue, we are going to get into spoiler territory. But what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Batman 50 at the very end. So you'll have a chance to listen to the rest of the episode, hear us talk about the rest of the books. And if you don't want Batman 50 spoiled for you, we'll let you know when to go ahead and shut the podcast off, and you'll be able to not have it spoiled. And then later, if you want to come back and hear our thoughts, obviously you can. So, other than Batman 50 and Catwoman 1, I think a lot of the other titles this week are from some of the other publishers. A couple of big Marvel books this week. And again, you know, apologies that we don't cover, you know, Marvel books on the New Comics Wednesday, but we like to talk about books we've actually read. It's hard for us to recommend something to you if we haven't actually read it, right? So, I'll hit Marvel up again this year at San Diego Comic-Con and find out if we can get on their list. I'm not sure what exactly it takes. Maybe I got to give him a kidney or something. I'm not really sure. So why don't you go ahead and get started, Manny? What's the first book you want to mention?
The first book I'll mention is going to be, I'll start with Aftershock's Jimmy's Bastards number 9. And that's by, all of a sudden everything wants to close on me. Garth Ennis, Ross Braun on artwork, and John Kellis on colors. And this is a really important issue because this is gonna wrap it up. This is the final issue of Jimmy's Bastards. So we know already that she's made an attempt to come back and save his partner from some of his bastards, and how that turns out. But issue 9 has a really, really interesting twist to it that actually I didn't see it coming. And I really don't want to spoil it, but I mean, just like the rest of the series has been so good. I definitely recommend this just to wrap it up. It's been a really, really good book by Ennis.
Yeah, I talked a little bit about Jimmy's Bastards on the Aftershock Monday catch-up episode. I kind of felt like I didn't care as much for the series once Jimmy Regent kind of went all wussy.
I felt the same way. I thought he was going to recover a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And like, just kind of like snap out of it. And when he didn't, I was kind of like, maybe he would snap out of it and the dog would just be a part of his thing now or something. And
it's character growth, but it was just so fun when he was completely
that's what made his character great.
Yeah, and he was so unapologetic and so chauvinistic and such a like a dinosaur in a way, you know.
I feel you on that.
It made it fun. So, but yeah, I totally think it's worth reading. Again, mature readers only. It's graphic right up till the end. The scene where Jimmy finally takes care of his arch nemesis, and then you see the results, man. That was brutal. You know the one I'm talking about, Manny, with the thing.
Super. Actually, those last few panels were super brutal.
Yeah.
In both battles.
Yeah. True.
Like just it was a lot, especially when his arch nemesis. Yeah, that's not. I don't even want to get into it.
Yeah. Russ Braun, man, that guy. He can draw himself some disturbing images.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right, the first book I'm going to talk about is Delta 13, number 3 from IDW. I've been following this title since it started and just kind of think I'm going to follow it to its conclusion. It's written by writer Steve Niles. The art is by Nate Jones. The letters are by Sean Lee. It's, as I mentioned, I think when I talked about the first issue, somewhat of a cross between Aliens and maybe The Expanse. We're dealing with a crew that's very much blue collar. They're out looking for asteroids they can mine certain minerals from. And they encounter an asteroid that's not on any of their charts. They land. They find something there. And they bring it on the ship despite some protest from some of the crew. And things kind of go sideways from there. So as far as being a little predictable, yeah, it's true, it's like watching a horror movie, don't open that door, you just know the car is going to run out of gas, or the person trying to escape is going to get in and the car is not going to start, things like that. They're classic cliches, they're tropes. There's definitely a lot of that going on in the title. You know when they bring this thing aboard the ship, it's not going to be good. You kind of see it coming. But that being said, it's somewhat enjoyable. It's certainly not the best thing I've ever read, but I'm giving it a chance. We'll see how it all plays out in the end. But I feel like the strongest part of the book is actually the art by Nate Jones, especially his color work. He does a really good job of using kind of grays and blues, even a little bit of green here and there, in a very muted tone. So you're getting this kind of washed out look of space, and it's creepy and it's moody, and that's probably where the book shines the most. His actual figure work is okay, it's not super detailed or anything like that. Same thing with the backgrounds, but he's really setting a mood, and it works really well. The dialogue, again, it's not the strongest. There's room for improvement, but sometimes it's fun to give these other books that you haven't read a try, especially from these smaller publishers, because oftentimes these creators will go on to bigger and better things. They'll learn something from having produced this book. They'll get feedback. They'll hear criticism, and they'll grow from that. Everybody has to start somewhere. So it's been an entertaining read, and we'll see how it all concludes with issue 4. What do you have up next, Manny?
I have the 50 anniversary issue of Green Lanterns, written by Dan Jurgens, art by Mike Perkins, and colors by Andy Troy and Pete Panatsis. And this one is a whole new arc that there's a lot going on in this issue. First off, let me just say that I wasn't too thrilled with Perkins' artwork in this book. Just really didn't like his style, and I find it a little messy. Especially there's some panels in specific that I can go back and pick out where I just did not like the artwork. It was kind of, for the lack of a better term right now in my mind, kind of blobby, and kind of just some of the scenes with John Stewart in space, I didn't like them at all. And so so the artwork kind of threw me off a little bit. But with that said, I really like the fact that this issue starts off with multiple Lanterns, not just Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz, but also with John Stewart. We have Kyle Rayner's in it, and then a couple of other ones that, for whatever reason, are escaping. Guy Gardner, Kilowog, and a couple of others. But there's something that is throwing off the rings, as well as affecting Mogul. And also, it has the Guardian spooked, and it's the first issue in this story arc, which I, for whatever reason, cannot find the book in front of me right now. The arcs of Evil's Might. So something's happening from within, and then the rings even start acting up, not following commands, and even and giving questionable advice. So it's a good start for a story, and given Jurgens's work on with Superman, I look forward to see what he's going to do with the Lanterns.
Yeah, is this his first Green Lanterns issue?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was Tim Seeley that took over for Sam Humphries, and he was on it for a while, and then
Seeley was really cosmic and in space.
Yeah.
And I wasn't too thrilled with that. This one seems all over the place. But I mean, it is a setup issue.
Yeah, and again, I'm not 100% on this, but I seem to recall, and I'll have to check with Dan when I see him in San Diego in a few weeks, that the last time, or when I did ask, it wasn't the last time I saw him, but I had asked him previously about characters that he maybe would want to work on someday that he felt like he hadn't had a proper run on, and Green Lantern was one of them. Granted, Hal's not in this particular issue, but you know, he's tackling a lot of the other Lanterns. And I totally agree with you. I didn't get a chance to read the issue. I'm actually a little bit behind on Green Lanterns because I saw 50 and I knew it was Dan Jurgens and I wanted to read it, but I knew I was a bit behind and I didn't have time to get caught up, but I do plan on getting caught up hopefully soon. Maybe when I have a day off this week for Independence Day, I'll get caught up on Green Lanterns. But when I saw Mike Perkins' art too, yeah, I kind of paused because I think Perkins did the art for the recent Green Lanterns annual. And I remember seeing the art in there and not liking it in places, just like you were saying, Manny. I mean, I think he draws like the spaceships really well. He handles the aliens really well. Backgrounds are great. But for some reason, when it comes to human anatomy, I'm looking at it right now. There's one panel with Jon Stewart in space where his head just does, it looks so out of proportion with the rest of his body. And sometimes his facial expressions leave a lot to be desired as well. You know, again, when he draws like the aliens, Kilowog and whoever, you know, it's fine because you don't really expect it to look any particular way. But yeah, he could definitely use some work on his facial expression. So, but yeah, definitely looking forward to getting caught up on Green Lanterns. All right, let me talk about my next book. Get the pager. It's another IDW title. It's Joe Hill's The Cape Fallen #1, created by Joe Hill and Jason Ciaramella. I think that's right. Ciaramella. The script in this issue is by Jason Ciaramella. Art by Zach Howard, colors by Nelson Daniel, and letters by Sean Lee. So if you're not familiar with the cape concept, it's kind of interesting. It's about a family whose father died in Vietnam and left two young sons behind. And the sons are pretty close in age, and they always played superheroes. One of them always was the villain. One of them always was the hero. And the guy that used to play the villain had this security blanket from when he was a baby that he always had with him. And as he got older, it faded and, you know, started falling apart. So his mom trimmed it down to like the size of a cape, sewed a red lightning bolt on the back of it, and also sewed a patch from his dad that came back with a few of his dad's other personal effects from Vietnam. And so he has this cape, and there's a tragedy in his past, and he grows up, and he's kind of on the fringes of life, right? He's not really successful, and his life kind of falls, you know, he's kind of in the cracks. He has a girlfriend that's successful. His brother that used to always play the hero went to Harvard, became a doctor, And he's just not, you know, what you would consider a, you know, a successful or like a winning person. And there's darkness in him. And we discover that darkness through the first four issues of the Cape series, or it might be five. It's four or five issues. So it's pretty interesting. It goes dark pretty quick. Joe Hill, for those that don't know, is Stephen King's son. So maybe there's something there as far as the darkness being passed down through genes or something. I don't know. But it was the Cape, the first, it actually started as a one-shot story, and it was nominated for an Eisner, and it narrowly lost to an issue of Unknown Soldier that was written by Joshua Dysart, actually. But based on the success of that one shot and being nominated for an Eisner and almost winning, IDW gave the green light to these creators to produce, you know, like flesh out the story. So we got that four or five issue series. And then I think about a year later, after the series came out, we got a one shot that told the story of the father in Vietnam, somewhat of a prequel to the Cape series. And in my mind, I think it should have ended right there. Like the original series was great, if not a little dark, but it had a nice satisfying conclusion. And I think that it should have ended right there. Having the prequel with the dad in Vietnam was interesting enough. It kind of gave us some insight into how the flight was possible and everything. And so that was okay. I could kind of get on board with that. But now they're bringing it back again in this Fallen number one. And the main character is back, and we're seeing him. This Fallen story basically appears like it's going to take place between a couple of the issues of the very first series, right? Like, oh, and by the way, here's what he was up to that happened off panel that you didn't know about. And I'm just not really sure that it's going to work for me. Like, it's the same creators. And so you would think, yeah, it's going to have the same tone and feel, but I think that the first series was so successful because we didn't get a lot of insight into motivations and everything. We got just enough to kind of understand what this guy was going through and why he was doing what he was doing. But you run the risk of kind of diluting those that first series, I feel like. So again, it's not that it's bad. The art by Zach Howard, who's been with the property since the beginning, is spectacular. He's an incredible artist. I'd never seen his work before. I think he really handles emotion and facial expression and like character acting so well. So that's very, very impressive. The colors by Nelson Daniel are also well done. And the scripting by Jason Chirimella. Again, it's good. The dialogue seems authentic and everything, but just don't know that it's necessary. Sometimes it's okay to be like, okay, we told the story with this property and now we're done. So I'm going to keep reading it because I enjoyed all the other the Cape one shot and especially the first series. So I do kind of want to see where it goes. But I could see myself, if it goes the way I think it's going to go, I could see myself maybe dropping out after issue two, unless it kind of improves in my mind. And again, it's not that it's a bad story or a bad comic. It's just I like what the first series did. I liked that was the whole story, and I just don't know that I need more, you know. So Manny, for example, I know you've read Irredeemable. So it would be like if somebody came along and said, oh, and by the way, between these two issues of Irredeemable, here's what the Plutonian was doing over in this part of the world. You know, and you could, if you have the same creators, it could be authentic and it could seem like it fits and everything, but it's not necessary. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The story has been told in my mind. So, all right. What do you have up next?
Catwoman number one, obviously from DC, writer and artist Joelle Jones, and then colors by Laura Allred. This kind of contains a bulk of spoilers for Batman 50, which we're going to talk about next. So I'm kind of going to stay away a little bit from just what happens. So let me start off again with, oh my God, like the way Jones does women specifically, how she draws them is just, I mean, I could stare at that book for, after I've read it and from time going over this book, I've looked at it several times. There's several panels in this book that I'm just in awe at the way that he does. She draws females, specifically Selena Kyle. And then it's funny because I kind of noticed that she draws guys a little bit grittier, which probably makes it so that the females stand out a little bit. And I think this thing is gorgeous. Just the cover alone, the main cover, I love it. The way she does eyes, and then Allard just really, really compliments her artwork and makes her a beautiful book. And then on the flip side, there's a character in the book who is going through, I mean, I don't know exactly what she's going through, but her body is like degenerating, and she goes from TV ready, just, you know, good looking older lady to this just like hideous, really creepy, no hair, no nose, teeth coming out. I mean, just so different. And I just appreciated it. And but as for the story itself, it really didn't do much other than to kind of let you know her situation, her status, and also set up the arc that's going to be called Copycat. But I mean, they couldn't have picked a better person to take on this book, take on this character. And I look forward to the next issues as it gets deeper into the story.
Yeah, I really like this issue. I feel like Catwoman's a character that Joelle Jones was born to write. The fact that she's an incredible illustrator as well is only icing on the cake. It's so interesting, right? Like last year, it was so obvious for me. It was an easy pick for a writer artist for the awards. It was Jeff Lemire without question. I actually had a hard time and had to go back. I was like, "What is there even anyone else to consider for writer and artist?" It's become so much more rare these days for the same creator to both write and draw a book, right? And then all of a sudden this year with Liam Sharp's The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman, I'm like, well, next year is going to be easy too. It's obviously going to be Liam. And now we get this from Joelle Jones, you know, her on a character she clearly was born to write, clearly understands, clearly has a lot of passion for. So I thought she did an incredible job of accurately giving us Catwoman's state of mind based on what happens in Batman 50. It makes total sense. Where she's at, and the story, you know, seems intriguing. This journey that she's going to take Catwoman on. And the artwork was spectacular as well. So I agree with you on all fronts. Really, really great start to that series. The last book I'm going to talk about is Low Life's number one. This is also from IDW. Really, did I pick all? No, this is from... Yeah, I guess I did. I picked all three IDW books this week. It's written by a friend of the show, Brian Buccioletto. Art is by Alexis Centenac, and letters are by Neil Uwataki. So this is very much a setup issue, much like Green Lantern's 50. We know supposedly the premise of Low Lives, based on the solicitations, is somebody robs a crime boss's poker game, and all the consequences that go along with that, right? But we don't even meet the crime boss in this issue. We're just kind of meeting some of the characters. The main character seems to be a police officer. We're trying to understand his life and the things that he's dealing with his wife, who has been affected by a tragedy, a shocking event in her life that's kind of put her on this bad path. And he's trying to do the best he can to care for his wife, but still be a police officer and do the right things and keep his integrity. And he's being pulled in a lot of different directions. So with the first issue, you really get a sense of him being kind of overwhelmed by all these different situations. And he's not sure, you know, what the right thing to do, because what would be the right thing for him to do, or what he wants to do in one facet of his life doesn't necessarily jive with other parts of his life, right? They're kind of diametrically opposed. So he seems like he's kind of between a rock and a hard place. The art by Alexis Centenac is done really, really well. They're not bright colors here. This isn't, your typical superhero comic. It's much more a drama piece. And so appropriately, the colors are a little bit more muted, a little more natural. But there's some action scenes that are handled really well. The transitions from panel to panel are very well done. And I'm very much invested in the story already with just one issue. I feel like Brian Buccioletto's becoming so good at telling these kind of stories. You know, he had his Sons of the Devil series over at Image, and then his Cannibal series was at Image as well. And again, in these stories that he's telling, he's taking ordinary people and he's putting them in these absolutely extraordinary circumstances. And the way they're acting and reacting to these circumstances is so poignant and so realistic. You know, you can completely relate to these characters when you kind of put yourselves in their shoes and think about how you would deal with it in these kind of situations. So I got anyone's familiar with I think it was Steven Soderbergh, who did the movie Traffic, like critically acclaimed, kind of an ensemble piece. That's kind of the vibe that I got from Low Lives, right? It's somewhat of an urban setting. There's, organized crime aspect in the background. There's some law enforcement aspect to the story. But there's all these different people and their lives are intersecting. And, anything can happen, and it's going to be drama, and it's going to be emotion, and it's going to be human interaction and people trying to make tough choices. So an incredibly well done start to the series. I really recommend it. It's Low Life's number one. Again, Brian Buccioletto is not one of those names that jumps off the stand. So if you are interested in this book, I really recommend letting your retailer know to pre-order it for you. Cause again, it's a book that may be hard to find if you don't let them know, being that it's from IDW and they're a bit of a smaller publisher. And I did reach out to Brian to have him come on to talk about the issue, but unfortunately he wasn't available. So that's going to do it for the books that we're going to talk about in depth, except for Batman 50. As I mentioned, we're going to go full on spoiler mode with Batman 50. But before we do that, let me give a quick rundown of some of the other titles that are on stands today that you may want to be aware of. The third volume of Marguerite Bennett's Animosity is out today, The Swarm. And I want to mention that because Animosity did recently get picked up by Legendary, the worldwide film rights. So these single issues are probably going to start climbing if they haven't already. It's already been a critically acclaimed book. It's pretty popular. Early issues are already hard to find. So if you do want to learn more about the world of Animosity, that's where I'm going to steer you, is pick it up and trade. Also from Aftershock, Jimmy's Bastards, which many mentioned, as well as the next issue of Dark Arc by Cullen Bunn. From DC, in addition to Catwoman, Green Lanterns 50, and Batman 50, which we're going to talk about, we've also got Deathstroke 33 and Harley Quinn 45, which is Sam Humphrey's first issue Harley Goes to Apocalypse. So very curious to see exactly what those hijinks are like. And then also Justice League number 3 from Scott Snyder is out today. And we'll be talking about that on the Justice League Spotlight coming up. Not this coming Friday, but the following Friday. We always give you a lot of time to read Justice League before we talk about it. And we will be talking on this Sunday, Superman Sunday, about the final issue of Man of Steel number 6. Man of Steel number 6, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Jason Fabok. It's double-sized. It's a double-sized issue, but it's still just the same $3.99 price. So getting a lot of value for your comic dollar right there. IDW, you know, I mentioned three of their books. Over at Image, we've got Death or Glory number 3 from Rick Remender and Bengal. Based on the shakiness of last issue for me, one of the scenes in there really weirded me out. I haven't actually read Death or Glory 3 yet. This may be the make or break issue for me. I may keep reading. I may not. I'm not sure. We've also got Medieval Spawn, Witchblade number 3, as well as Unnaturals number 1. And Walking Dead is up to 181. All right, over at Marvel, I mentioned there's a few books of note. We've got Captain America number 1 by Ta-Nehisi Coates. I know a lot of people have been anxiously awaiting that. We've got Cosmic Ghost Rider number 1, who was kind of a breakout character from Donnie Cates' recent run on Thanos. We've got, also from Donnie Cates, Death of Inhumans number 1. I've talked a lot on this podcast about how I feel like Marvel was trying to shove the Inhumans down our throats because they didn't have the rights to the X-Men, and they were trying to make the Inhumans like the new X-Men, like make them as popular as the X-Men and then bring them into the MCU, and it didn't matter that they didn't have the X-Men rights. That did not work. And that being said, I may read this because Donnie Cates may be cleaning up Marvel's mess, so to speak. He may be like, okay, remember how Marvel like created all these Inhumans? Because it used to be the Inhumans were relatively few. And then all of a sudden it was like everybody's an Inhuman. Even people that never even knew they were Inhumans that were had been living their lives as regular humans come to find out they're actually Inhumans. I like the title Death of Inhumans. I like the fact that I think Donnie Cates is going to be killing a bunch of them off. Not that I'm bloodthirsty, but again, let's bring it back to the status quo. Let's put the Inhumans back in their box. There have been some good stories that have come out of this expansion of the Inhumans corner of the Marvel Universe. There have been some cool characters. Frank McGee comes to mind. But I'm happy to have them go back. And if Donnie Cates, whose star is hotter than ever, star is like so on the rise, if he can be the one to tell the story, then yeah, I'll check it out. So looking forward to that. Also looking forward to Immortal Hulk number 2. The first issue of that was really, really strong. And then we've also got Star Wars number 50. So that's a milestone issue for Star Wars. And then finally over at Valiant, we've got Quantum and Woody Volume 1, Kiss Kiss Clang Clang trade paperback. Collecting the, I think it's the first four or five issues of this latest volume of Quantum and Woody. And then the third issue of Valiant High also comes out this Wednesday. So that's going to do it for the non-spoiler part of the episode. We're going to go full on spoilers now. So again, if you don't want Batman 50 to be spoiled for you, turn the podcast off now. You have been warned. If you keep listening, the story's going to be ruined for you. We're going to talk all about it. So why don't you start, Manny? Batman 50. What are your thoughts?
I had to read it a couple of times because I didn't know exactly what to think. I was upset at both of them, at one of them, at Catwoman, and then I kind of understood why, but kind of saw it as an excuse, and then just felt so bad for Bruce. And so, I mean, my feelings for it were all over the place. And I mean, like, Tom King like dangled the Joker at us for so many issues only for it to be not even relevant at all. And I thought that was great. The way it was laid out, the way they talked about each other, because the whole issue was just one letter to another, I thought was fantastic. It's a beautiful issue. What I liked the best about that issue was how there's so many guest artists page by page, and what I found myself that I was really proud of is that I would get to the next page and I'd be like, oh, that's so and so, or that's so and so, and I'd get to the bottom and I was right every time. So that was really cool. I pride myself in that. With that said, it overall was a fantastic issue, and I found it interesting Tom King's comments about the spoiler, because he was saying that his story is actually gonna, his Batman Catwoman love story is gonna span 100 issues. So I can't even imagine what the hell he has planned going forward, because one thing I won't talk about is that last scene. I was like, that is messed up. I mean, talk about breaking the bat. You went deep to get to that moment, but it was a really, really great issue. And I think we're both, even though we've read it, we're both going to be heading out to midnight releases to share our thoughts with other fans.
Yeah, definitely. And let me give the creative team real fast. You know, Manny mentioned written by Tom King. The art is by Mikhail Yanin, sort of, because there's, again, a bunch of splash pages, just the way the issue's laid out. And the colors are by Jun Chung. So as Manny said, it's a letter between the two. Like Bruce wrote a letter to Selina to tell her kind of why he was ready to marry her and why he thought he should. And Selina wrote a letter to Bruce about her feelings and how she sees him and why she ultimately decided not to go through with it. And the reason I won't spoil, but it made so much sense to me. It was completely logical what she said, and it was very heartfelt. And she's taking on a huge burden. She's making a sacrifice, and she feels like the sacrifice is an immense one on her part, but one she feels compelled to make if she wants to stay true to the feelings that she has for Bruce. But here's the thing, right? Why it's so much worse for her than for him, because as Manny said, there is a crazy scene that, again, we, you know, full spoilers, but we want to leave some surprises. Even if you're listening to this, or if you've already read it, you know, that last page is, yeah, totally, it's just brutal, right? But here's the thing, like, Selena's got to carry around more than just, okay, I've lost the love of my life. Bruce has that to carry around too. He's lost the love of his life. But Selena's got to carry around the extra burden that it's her fault. It's her, she made the decision. She's got to live with that. And she knows how much she hurt Bruce. But again, she felt like she didn't really have a choice. So yeah, really, really well done. So these two letters, and so it's kind of interspersed. It doesn't even go like one page letter, you know, Bruce letter, one page Selena letter, because mixed in with those is the actual narrative of the events that are actually happening. And those are the pages that are illustrated by Mikhail Yanin. And we get some really great character moments in those. My favorite page in the whole issue is a very touching moment between Batman and Alfred, or Bruce and Alfred, that's really incredible and was, I felt like, the most touching scene in the issue. I read it multiple times too. Like, I read it, you know, from cover to cover the first time, and then I went back and I read, let me just read the Selina letter, and then let me just read the Bruce letter, and then let me read the whole thing again. So I read it multiple times too. And yeah, it is a lot of fun to kind of page through and figure out who did what splash pages. So let me go through real fast and give the rest of the creative team. And again, these are all splash pages. by some of the greatest artists in the industry. So we've got a Jose Garcia Lopez page with Trish Mulville. We've got a Becky Cloonan page. We've got a Jason Fabok and Brad Anderson page. We've got a Frank Miller and Alex Sinclair page. We've got a Lee Bermejo page, which is probably my second favorite of all the pinup pages. We've got a, oh my God, Neil Adams, drawing a blank on the first name for a second. Neil Adams page with Hi-Fi doing the colors. We've got a Tony Daniel page with Tomeu More on. That's a really cool page with Catwoman on a motorcycle. We've got an Amanda Connor page with Paul Mounts on colors. We've got a Raphael Albuquerque page. We've got a, I think it's Andy Kubert with Alex Sinclair page. We've got a Paul Pope with Jose Villarubia page. We've got a, this is my favorite of the pinup pages. We've got a Mitch Gerrits page. I'm just stopping to look at it right now as I'm paging through. It's so amazing. It's such a great page. We've got a Clay Mann and Jordy Belair page. We've got a Ty Templeton, and I'm not sure. Smith is on the colors. I'm not sure which Smith that is. We've got a Joelle Jones with Jordy Belair page, and a David Finch with Jordy Belair page, a Jim Lee, Scott Williams, Alex Sinclair page, a Greg Capullo with FCO Placencia page, and a Lee Weeks page. So again, it's just a who's who of incredible artists that contributed to this issue. And like I said, it makes complete sense. I understand that people are upset that it got spoiled in the New York Times piece. I understand that. I kind of understand what DC was saying too. They're coming out saying, first of all, we thought that the New York Times piece was going to run on Monday, not Sunday. And even the guy that wrote it in the New York Times said he should have asked his editor for another headline so that it didn't actually spoil the story in the headline. Like, at least, because that's inadvertent, right? I mean, somebody sees the headline in the entertainment section inadvertently, and right there it's spoiled. It could have at least just said, oh, the outcome of Batman and Catwoman's marriage in the title, you know, without saying what the outcome was. And then somebody knows, oh, I can't read that article. I don't want it spoiled for me. But DC's whole point of why they wanted to, that they agreed to release it, you know, like I said, so say, let's say it did come out Monday. DC figured review copies go out Friday. By Monday, everyone's probably going to know. Somebody's going to leak it. We've seen in the past, and I was kind of surprised that we, and I guess maybe just the based on the nature of the story Tom King's telling, it had to be this way. But Manny, you remember when the Detective Comics, where Jason Todd, or not Jason Todd, but oh my God, Tim Drake gets kidnapped by Dr. Oz, but we're supposed to think that he got killed. And you remember the review copy they sent us, those last like three pages were blank.
Yeah, I do.
So I was kind of wondering if this, you know, if the last few pages of this were going to be blank and we wouldn't know what actually happened. But again, I guess based on the way the story played out, but I still feel like they could have done that. If they didn't want it leaked, they could have done that. But so I don't know if it's the best, you know, excuse or reason, or if it's true or not. But yeah, that was why DC went ahead and the other thing they said is, hey, we're trying, you know, obviously we want New York Times coverage because we're trying to reach people that aren't reading comics and get them in there to read comics. But there's always a subsection of people that are going to be mad when you do things like this. And I do kind of understand, and people have been invested for 6 months in this story. Hey, will they, won't they? But I got to say, like, if you've been reading Tom King's Batman from the beginning of Rebirth, you had to know that they were not going to get married. I mean, Manny and I knew it before we even got the review copy. In fact, we were talking about it. Like, when the review copies came in on Friday, I sent out a text. I'm like, all right, I got the review copies. I still say they don't get married. And Maddie's like, yep, they don't. There's no way. It's just Batman can't be happy and be Batman in a way, right? And I just didn't see them taking an icon like that and marrying him off. I just didn't see it. Then you throw Tom King as the writer into the mix, who's always throwing curveballs. I don't even think Tom knows how to throw a fastball. All his stuff curves. Everything he throws does not end up where you would expect it to. So I'm sorry. If you're one of the people that's upset and that it got spoiled, you really should have seen it coming. And you should not have taken Tom King at his word, or Batman at his word, or Catwoman, and expected it to them to get married. I just don't think it was ever going to happen. So, but it's a great issue. To Manny's point earlier, Tom says he's going to Batman number 103, is what I heard. So he wants to write 100 issues. He's basically writing one whole story. This is Batman's story, but in his mind, Batman and Catwoman, Bruce and Selina, go hand in hand. And so really the story he's telling is one long story. Things that happened in his first issue of Batman are going to matter in his 103rd issue of Batman. And I'm saying 103rd because he wants to write 100 issues of Batman all by himself. And he's had co-writers on 3 books. With the Night of the Monster Men, he had Steve Orlando. And then with the Button crossover, he had Joshua Williamson. So he's got his own story to tell that's 100 issues long. So you add in those 3 issues where he had a co-writer and you get 103. So we're only halfway done, right? Not even quite halfway done. There's 53 issues to go. So there's no reason to think that they might not still end up together. Like, now that he's thrown the curveball about, okay, they were going to get married and now they didn't, I could see that. Like, I could see him bringing Bruce and Selina back together and them actually getting married now.
Well, they already did the future issue where they're together when they're older.
Yeah, that's right.
But I mean, God damn it. Like, and you know, it's funny because we read so much stuff like King, and he's been like waving the Joker at us for so many issues. And you know, I told you that I was like, I'm gonna be so freaking mad if like she gets shot or like he comes in and like that's why we can't be together because the Joker or something like that. And it was all like smoke and mirrors, like. And when I read it, I was like, oh, I should have known better. I really should have known better.
It's so much more impactful this way. If it had been the Joker, I would have been. I kind of thought it was going to be something to do with the Joker, just because, like you said, the Joker's been so prominent in King's run. But I mean, you know how sick I am of the Joker at this point. So,
kudos to him for doing it that way, like just like baiting us with it, and then just going a completely different direction.
Yeah, it's much more playing with our emotions doing it this way, 100%.
So. Yeah, completely.
So yeah, we'll have to hit Tom up in San Diego and I mean, when I go to the midnight release here in a few minutes as we're recording this, I'm gonna sit down and talk with Mitch Gerrards about it, and get his thoughts. So we'll see what he knew when. So.
It is kind of twisted though that DC would release a Batman Catwoman wedding reception playlist. Because it's not gonna happen.
Yeah. Yeah, they went all in, man. Wedding tie-ins and all kinds of stuff. So. All right. Anything else that we want to say about Batman 50?
Gotta pick it up. It's gonna be one of those issues that's going to be remembered for a long time.
Yeah, agree 100%. All right, well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. I know a lot of you just use the podcast app on your phone. You can do a search for The Comic Source and find us that way. We'd really appreciate it. But those ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners. So 5-star reviews on iTunes especially help out. And all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. And you heard Manny and I mention San Diego Comic-Con several times during this episode. We'll be there in just a few short weeks. If you're going to be there, let us know. We'd love to meet up with you, grab a picture, hook you up with the Comic Source lanyard, and find out what you like and what you don't like about the show. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.